The record-breaking Netflix film K-Pop Demon Hunters is encoded with an occult tale of spiritual evolution, and today I'll break it down for you as we decode Saturn, chaos, and the golden Han Moon as symbolism for the new golden age. We'll connect it into Korean shamanism, theosophy, the Pleiades, and even Stephen King's It to reveal how this film is showing us a metaphysical war between light and dark through the opposing polarities of male and female with music as a weapon. My name is Isaac Weishaupt. I've been covering hidden occult messages in pop culture since 2014, and you're listening to the Occult Symbolism and Pop the podcast. You know, I just run with it. Sometimes I can rapid fire those intros out and it's smooth as butter, and sometimes, you know, I don't. And I leave it in there because I'm just a guy in his room. Today we're going to cover the occult symbolism of K-pop Demon Hunters, and it's going to be real interesting because we're going to cover a lot of the themes that we've covered over the years: Saturn, chaos, magic, mantras, the power of the spoken word, alchemy, goatin' with the bobbins. You know, you'll hear a phrase in the movie, when darkness finally meets light. That's goatin' with the bobs. Occult geometry, the Faustian bargain, selling one's soul. I mean, it's all here. It's all here. The power of approaching one's own shadow. Oh, boy. And if you've been with me long enough, you know that we covered all the Kobe Bryant books that he wrote about the kids' books he wrote. It's the same thing. And as usual, we're going to start out with my film analysis. I like to do a little pre-game questions for people who are like, what the hell is a K-pop Demon Hunter? Well, should you watch it first? At first, you know, I had some young family members over, and they wanted to watch this movie. And when it fired up, I was like, oh, this is not my cup of tea. You know, because it's like it's a graphic, like a cartoon, right? And so the first 15, 20 minutes, I was like, oh boy, I'm in for a rough ride here. But then it got better and it was entertaining enough. I was like, okay, it's pretty good, you know. About two-thirds in, I was like, all right, wrap it up already, you know. The run length is about 100 minutes, as you know, close to my perfected 90 minutes. So I'm like, okay, not bad. But then, and I noticed all these themes in there, and I was like, okay, I'm going to have to watch this again for the show, for my people, all right? And on the second viewing, I actually liked this significantly better because I kind of understood what they were getting at a little bit better. I mean, don't tell nobody, I might have felt a little bit of emotion, which I promptly stuffed down like a real man. So, should you watch it? I would say yes. It's not my cup of tea, but it was a pretty cool story, pretty unique. It's a piece of pop culture moment, right? Because it's the most watched original title in Netflix history. Over 300 million views in the U.S., the soundtrack is blowing up on the pop charts, over 3 billion streams globally. And literally just yesterday, I saw in the news that they're going to work on a sequel that is going to be dropping in 2029, which won't matter. We're all going to be shoved in the singularity by then into the Matrix, so who cares? But yeah, I'd say it's worth it, you know. Now, normally, during my pregame, we talk cast and crew. Man, I don't know none of these people, all right? Mostly Korean. The only one I recognize was Ken Jeong, who plays Bobby. He's like the agent character for this band called The Huntrix, which we'll talk about. He was the dude from The Hangover with the, micro thing, the mini obelisk. And he's a medical doctor in real life, so that's crazy. And that's it. That's all I got for pregame. So if you're ready to start decoding, we're going to get right into it. Also, you know, I always got to take you down Grifter Alley a little bit. This one's free, though, okay? Listen up. I want to tell you about my YouTube channel. I've been torched on there twice. I'm building my third one now. Third time's a charm, and this one's going to be a charm. I need you right now, while I'm yammering on, pick up your little phone, whatever you're on, you're at work, huddling in the cubicle, go to YouTube, search for occult symbolism, all one word, right? And subscribe. That's my new channel. I'm already up to dang near 12,000 subs. Those are rookie numbers, though. I'm gunning for that 100K this time. My first channel, we got up to 75K before it got torched. The second one got up to 25K before it got torched. This time is no shorts, no losses. I'm complying with, I'm being a good boy. Please, YouTube, I won't say any bad words. you know, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to talk about the sensitive things that YouTube doesn't want me to talk about on YouTube. I'm going to keep talking about it. Those episodes will not appear on YouTube because I'm going to be a good boy and I'm going to get to 100K and I need you to help me. All right. So, and also if you're wondering if you're a supporter, you're like, what do you mean? So supporters tier two, you get the video version, early access, ad free, the works, you know, Patreon VIP section. So you've always had this. This has always been a thing for you. And also the version you get as a supporter, you get the clips from the shows and the movies intact. YouTube strips all that out. They cut the copyright, censors everything. I don't know how. I see channels that cover stuff and they're playing the full ass movie. I'm like, how do they do it? I don't know. I don't have a team of lawyers. I don't know how some of these conspiracy guys with big mustaches can go on here and talk about stabby jabbies and the country the size of New Jersey. Totally fine. Totally fine. I overstepped one little boundary. It's gone. Off with your head. I don't know. These people are plugged in. They've got good lawyers. I don't know what it is. But this time, it's going to be me. All right? I'm making it happen. No shorts, no losses. Go subscribe to my new YouTube channel, Occult Symbolism. I mean it this time. We're sticking around for good this time. All right? Yeah, so that's all I got. But I'll be dropping all my episodes of all the pod, except for the sensitive ones, on the YouTube the day that the free feed people, I get, people are mad at me, the free feed losers, the day they get the audio, it'll also be on YouTube. So if you like the video version, check it out. I'm putting a ton of work into it. Support your boy. Subscribe to the YouTube, all right? Now, and also, I'm also going to be prepping some exclusive YouTube content, some shorter analysis that you're going to want to see anyway. You might as well go do it now, right? Okay. And you'll get to see my cool fit checks. I got a fit, today's fit check. I got Masters of the Universe on with the sleeves cut off as usual, right? I cut this one a little snug to the nips. You might get a little peak of salami if you watch close enough. Little nip slip free of charge. So peep the YouTube video. It's worth it alone for that. Is it not? All right. Okay, that's enough. Let's get into the movie. Plot spoilers. Coming. Plot spoilers coming. K-pop Demon Hunters. All right. They introduce us. The whole theme of this movie is about this female three-member band called the Huntrix. Korean K-pop, right? They call pop music in Korea K-pop, I guess. I'm not well-versed in it. Although I did spend a year deployed there in the military, so I know that they don't speak Korean. They speak Hangul. I can speak a little bit of it, enough to get by. But Huntrix is the world's most popular band in this show, right? And they are the Hunters. And the narrator starts out and explains what's going on with this whole thing and what they're up to, right? Now, you'll notice that the stage shows some pretty interesting symbolism if we take some shots of it and take a look at it, right? And I'll put the images on the video so you can see it. You see the Saturnian hexagram. Saturn, of course, the deity of time and measurements, comes from the adversarial set, from the outer, you know. I talked about all this in The Dark Path, if you're not aware of that. And I'm also going to do a Saturn deep dive for you guys here in the next, give me 3 to 6 months. Saturn being the god of constraints and the force of chaos, which is kind of interesting considering that this Han moon is a sort of enveloping sheath, which you're going to hear. I'm going to play the clip. They set it all up for you. Basically, the Huntrix are trying to build the Han moon, the golden Han moon, this sheath that covers the earth and protects it from the demons, all right? And this sheath was actually what Saturn was doing to the earth back in the supposed golden age of the occult. They believed that Saturn enveloped the earth in its golden purple, or its purple haze during what they called the golden age. So the Han moon is very similar. It's a sheath covering the earth. On the stage, you also see the eight-pointed star. This is the star of chaos magic. Star of chaos symbolizes chaos magic. Also utilized by anarchists and Eurasianisms like Alexander Dugin, which we've talked about, plugged into the Steve Bannon network back in 2020 when I interviewed Professor Ben Teitelbaum. And by the way, everything that dude was saying in his book, War for Eternity, about Steve Bannon, my man was on the money. Years ahead of his time. And we talked about it in that interview, obviously. the symbols used in Dungeons and Dragons, in the Illuminates of Thanateros Chaos Magic Group, which was created by Peter Carroll, right? Peter Carroll's a big name in Chaos Magic. And that name of the group that he founded, it combines the ideas of sex and death and the opposing forces for achieving magical consciousness. And it uses elements of Crowley's Thelema, Tantra, magic and stuff. And people like Robert Anton Wilson and Tim Leary and William Burroughs were all into this stuff. Okay, so chaos magic is a real thing. It's a very major component of the occult. All right. So when you see all that stuff in the opening sequence on the stage, you kind of think, okay, I see that. That's a symbol. Well, there's a meaning to it. And we're going to unpack that in the conclusion. So let's take a listen to what the narrator says is going on and setting up the movie for us.
The world will know you as pop stars, but you will be much more than that. You will be hunters. Demons have always haunted our world, stealing our souls and channeling strength back to their king, Tiamat. Until heroes arose to defend us, born with voices that could drive back the darkness, singing songs of courage and hope. But hunters are more than warriors. Our music ignites the soul and brings people together. With this connection, the first hunters created a shield to protect our world, the Honmun. Every generation, a new trio of hunters is chosen to fulfill our ultimate duty. A barrier so strong it is impenetrable, that will keep demons and Kima from our world forever. The Golden Honmun. And now, that duty falls to you. That victory is within your reach. It is your voices, your song, that will create the Golden Honmun.
Yes, Celine.
So we heard that there are these demons that steal souls for their king, Guima. And there's these voices that can fight back, certain heroes, certain selected ones, and these are the hunters. And their voice, the spoken word, and the music that they create unites the people to create the Honmun. This shield, this sheath, the interplanetary foreskin to protect the world from demons, all right? And every generation, a trio of hunters are assigned to maintain and build this golden Honmun to try to keep the demons from the world so they can't steal our souls, okay? So hunters and Honmun equal good. Demons equal bad. All right. We're talking about how these hunters use the power of God. There's an ancient belief in the power of the spoken word. And that's what mantras are all about. That's, you know, we hear it. God used to create the world through spoken word. He said, let there be light. In Kabbalah, they talk about numerology and words and how, you know, certain letters and the formulation of those letters have certain powers. Even goes back to Gnosticism, abracadabra, which is, you know, a magical incantation, means as I speak, I create, which is where the Gnostic God's name comes from. It comes from Abraxas, ties into abracadabra. Right. Now, the Honmun is apparently not a real thing in Korean mythology, because I looked that up. But I did find a post on kinemdraws.tumblr. That talks about how the word is a combination of Yong Hon, which means soul or spirit, and moon, which is a term for a door or a gate. So Han Moon could mean the soul gate. So either way, we're introduced to this trio of hunters called Huntrix. That's the female band. And it's a combination of hunter with the Latin suffix ix, meaning it's feminine. And they are tasked with using their voices to create the Golden Honmun. And you've got three band members. You've got Mira, who's the lead dancer. She's the black sheep of her family. You got Zoe, who's the rapper from Burbank. And then you got Rumi. She's kind of the main character, right? Now, her mom died when she was a baby, and her mother was in a hunter's group prior, right? So she was born into this. It's in her bloodline. Now, fun fact. The director of this movie the daughter is named Rumi, and she actually plays the voice of the child Rumi in the film. Then you've got another character. You've got is Celine. This is the female's manager that assembled the group originally, and she also plays the role of being the what do you call it, like the foster mom for Rumi. So Huntrix, they're on their private plane, and it turns out there's some demons in disguise as humans managing the flight, and they're trying to basically stop the Huntrix from performing, stopping them from using the spoken word, right, to build the Hanmoon. So the Huntrix girls call them out, big fight, song, sequence, the works, right? And you have to understand this is very much like a, you know, geared towards children. It's a cartoon, so we're going to skip through a lot of stuff, right, because it's not relevant. They can tell that these people are demons, though, because they have these patterns on their skin that form on their body, okay? Then we flash over to Hell, and Guima is there, and he needs demons to kill Huntrix, as we already know. Because once that golden Hanmoon gets built, the demons are done forever. So Guima doesn't want that. This guy named Jinu is in Hell, and he shows up with a guitar and a tiger, and he shows up, he sings about how Guima is the ruler that needs to feed on souls to have strength, but his fire is about to go out when this golden Hanmoon gets built. And Jinu wants to create a demonic boy band to counter the forces of the female Huntrix band, an opposing force, right? And Jinu has this history with Guima that we'll hear more about later. But this demon boy band, they aim to steal the Huntrix fans so that they can't complete the Golden Hanmoon. Jinu also implies that, like, in exchange for this, he wants to erase some of his memories. Sounds like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. A little MK Ultra-esque. And notice that the Hanmoon's final stage is gold, which is actually the final stage of alchemy, right? Turning lead into gold. So the Huntrix, they wrap up their world tour and they plan on taking a break, but Rumi, she's like a grinder, man. She's a hustler. She wants to put out a new single already. It's called Golden. And they talk, which obviously implies the Golden Hanmoon. They talk about what they want to do. And Zoe says, look, I just want to watch these turtle documentaries. And we actually saw earlier there was a turtle in the film kind of buried in there. And this is important because the symbolism of the turtle is very much tied into what I'll talk about in the conclusion. It's deeper than you could ever imagine. We also notice in their apartment, they have a checkered board floor, the checkered pattern floor, which is, of course, the opposing polarities. Again, we talk about this all the time. The Freemasonic lodges have the Moses pavement, and it's very important for understanding the duality nature of reality for these people. Rumi tells them that, look, we're going to promote this new single called Golden, all right? And they show the video. It starts off with a ray of sun, golden sun, over Rumi's left all-seeing eye, right? The enlightenment of the occult ways. We see that Rumi has these markings that the demons do. So it's a little bit strange, right? She's been hiding it this whole time. Nobody knows about this. So she's part demon, it seems. What's going on? You're going to find out. Rumi is practicing for the song Golden, and her voice starts cracking, and it's apparently linked to these demon marks showing up on her body. And she flashes back to being raised by Celine, and she sings about when the darkness finally meets the light. And she asks Celine, her, you know, mother, her stepmother or whatever, if hunters kill all the demons, and if that includes anyone with those patterns, like regardless, like do they even care if the demons could be good, basically is what she's asking. And Celine tells her that, look, you're part demon because your father was a demon, but your mother was a hunter. So you kind of got both, but you're going to be a good person. You're going to be a hunter and you're going to seal the golden Hanmoon and you're going to banish all the demons. And when you do that, the marks will be gone, right? So she's a hybrid. She's a hybrid of good and evil. And Rumi wants to share this information with her bandmates, but Celine is like, no, kid, you can't do that until those patterns are gone. They won't understand. And her demon side appears to be coming out. She's singing. Her demon voice starts, you know, cracking through. She's trying to hold it together. She has to cancel their performance But she says, like, look, for real, I'm going to get it together for the big Idol Awards. That's the sort of, that's the big climax of the movie is these Idol Awards. That's what everything goes towards, all right? So she's like, look, I'm going to get it together for the Idol Awards. Let's just chill and so on.
Rubinim. Sit. You need no introduction. So, a problem with your voice.
Yes. So we need one of your awesome tonics. Something that will work super fast.
Okay. Let me see. In order to heal a part, we must understand the whole. I see. No, actually, I don't see. Very strange. You have lots of walls up.
Whoa, he's so good, right?
So many walls.
Walls? I don't have walls.
Yeah, you do. He is kind of good.
I'm just trying to stay focused.
Focus is good. But focusing on one part leads to ignoring other parts, making you separated, isolated.
Oh, emotionally closed off?
Yes.
She's also a workaholic, doesn't know how to relax.
I know how to relax.
I bet she refuses to go to the bathhouse with you.
Oh my gosh, yes!
How did you even...
Dude, we've been trying to take her to the bathhouse
forever!
How is this helpful?
It's helping me a lot.
Whoa, I can't believe you got all that wisdom just from looking at her.
I see...
Wait, why are you looking at me?
Eagerness to please. Maybe a little too eager.
What? I'm not like that. You guys would tell me if I was really like that, right?
I see.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, how does this help me get my voice back?
As I said, to treat the part, we must understand the whole.
That's great and all, but I thought we were here just for your tonics.
Just give us the voice juice.
I know just the tonics you need.
So the girl, excuse me. So the girls go to an herbal doctor to get some remedies for her voice. Maybe I'm part demon. My voice is giving out. And he says that in order to heal a part of you, you have to understand the whole. And this entire dialogue is about how she's got these walls up. She's suppressing something. What could she be suppressing? It's her shadow, right? And he talks about how she's ignoring other parts of herself. Again, implying that she's ignoring her shadow inside. And to fix the voice, she must understand the whole. She must know thyself, which is a main theme in occultism. The doctor sells them some tonic. Turns out he's a fraud, whatever. They're walking out and they see this group of four, you know, very attractive young men. And they're this new boy band called the Saja Boys. And this is Ginu and three other demons, okay, basically. And they're there. They're trying to steal all the Huntrix fans. And they sort of have an interaction. And there's this moment of attraction between Rumi and Ginu. Whatever. And the Saja Boys, they perform for the locals. They perform this song called Soda Pop. And... you know, the girls are able to see that this boy band, Saja Boys, they have the markings. They're like, oh, they're demons. And what's strange is in the movie, they say they're magicians. They say they're magicians first. Because there's a relation there, right? There's a relation to magic, which is all about interfacing with the angels and demons. So, oh, and by the way, Saja means, in Hangul, in Korean, it means lion or grim reaper, apparently. And what's interesting is that lion in astrology is Leo or the Leo's gate, which is happens in August. And that's the power of Sirius and Babylonian magic. And if you're like, bro, what you talking about? Listen to my film analysis about weapons that just came out, last week? Because we go deep into that kind of stuff. And also the grim reaper, of course, a depiction of Saturn. Like I said, that's what this is all about. So the Saja Boys, they're already getting super popular. They're doing little TV shows, doing little hot sauce shows or whatever, and they're showing up. And Huntrix is like, whoa, they're taking our whole fan base, which is exactly what their plan was. They have some battles, and Ginu sees that Rumi is part demon. And when they're sort of having a battle, so... he actually helps her. He helps her cover up her exposed markings so that her bandmates don't see it. And it's interesting because the bandana he ties around her exposed demon markings is checkered pattern, again with the opposing polarities. So Huntrix, they see that the Han Moon is now getting weak, and they figure out that Guima actually sent these Saja boys to steal their fans. Now they're onto it, right? And you'll notice, again, another reference to a turtle. Zoe is wearing a shirt that has turtles on it. Rumi then sees a bird with a tiny hat, and you'll see on the bird with a tiny hat, you also see that it has the circle with the dot in the center. That's the symbol for the solar, right? Like you see with the Target logo. It's an ancient symbol for the sun. And the tiger cat thing delivers this message from Jinu. It says, hey, I want to meet up. And we find out that Jinu told Guima he's going to use his knowledge of Rumi being part demon in order to manipulate her, in order to manipulate her shame and to take advantage of her.
A demon girl, also hunter, hiding, walking around free in the human world.
Just hunter, not demon.
Then how'd you get the patterns?
That's none of your business.
Huh. I know what it feels like to have them.
Feel? You're a demon. Demons don't feel anything.
Is that what you think? That's all demons do. Feel. Feel our shame, our misery. It's how Guima controls us. Do you not hear him in your ear?
What are you talking about?
Huh. You're lucky. I'll never forget the first time I heard him. That was 400 years ago. My family was extremely poor and miserable. I had a single possession to my name, an old bipa. So I busked the streets, but it didn't get me anywhere. I was desperate. We were starving. Then I heard him.
You can't do anything for your family. You're not good enough for them. But I can help you be good enough.
Overnight, my fate was changed. I was praised for my voice, even by the king himself. My family and I live in the palace grounds. Our bellies were finally full, our clothes clean. We were happy. But the patterns, they kept spreading until they consumed me. And I was condemned to the demon world, prisoner of Guima for all eternity. My family lost everything. And without me, they were even worse off than before. Every day since, I've been haunted by the memory of failing them.
You left them. Left them behind. Failed them.
These are a constant reminder of my shame. A shame I can never escape.
So Jinu meets her, tells her, you know, Guima controls all the demons through fear and shame. And that's how Guima sold his soul to him in order to save his family. Or Jinu, I should say. And the shame of that failure is what keeps him trapped in hell. Which is actually pretty smart. I've heard a lot of people talk about the afterlife being a sort of manifestation of what you depict it being, which is kind of weird, right? But shame is, in fact, a real controlling factor. I've taken enough years of therapy to know that shame is a trigger that makes you show up not at your best, right? But what we're talking about here specifically is Jinu took the Faustian bargain. And this is just like the Crossroads. In exchange for the musical abilities, he sold his soul to the devil. Same thing. He sold his soul to Guima. So Huntrix decides, look, we're going to write a new song. F this golden song. We're going to write a song called Takedown. And that's how we'll defeat the Saja boys. And the lyrics are much different than Golden. It's not positive. It's negative. They're being drugged down into fighting and talking about hating these people and so on. Also in this exchange, there's the rapper girl talks about how she has 23 notebooks, which is interesting because of the 23 enigma of Discordianism and the law of fives, that everything happens in fives. Not super relevant to my theory, but I wanted to point that out. So Rumi starts to question the lyrics and why they're so full of hate. And the bandmate's like, no, we do hate them. They're demons and we want to send them back to hell for eternal suffering. But Rumi, she's kind of caught feelings for Jinu, and she's part demon, and none of these girls know any of this. So she's questioning all of this now. Rumi meets up with Jinu again, and she proposes that Saja boys help the Huntrix win the Idol Award so they can complete the Han Moon, which will actually block Guima, and Jinu could stay safe in this world. He doesn't have to go back to hell. So they kind of agree on that. The Huntrix are practicing for the Idol Awards. Rumi is really tripping on singing this song with all the hateful lyrics. She meets up with Jinu again, talks about her shame, but since she met him, her voice is getting fixed up. Like, he's making her feel okay about who she is. And they sing a song about the power of shame keeping you in hell, you know, and how you have to, like, kind of move past that. Meanwhile, Guima, he's watching all this. He's like, oh, hell no. He pulls Xinyu in and warns him. He's like, you better not help Romy. And he starts turning up the shame to level 11 on Xinyu to keep him in line, telling him, look, like, you betrayed your own family, you loser. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. So the Huntrix meet up, and they debate even singing this song, Takedown. And they decide, look, we should just sing Golden because that's the best parts of us anyway. Stay positive, right? So then we finally get there. The third act, it's the Idol Awards. Saja Boys are supposed to open up, and it's a competition between Saja Boys and Huntrix as to who wins the Idol Awards. Saja Boys are supposed to open up, but they're fighting each other. So they're like, Huntrix, you guys got to take the stage. And they're up there, they're singing Golden. But then we find out that the two other girls in the band aren't actually them. They're actually demons. And the music switches over to Takedown, and the demons tear off Rumi's sleeve. And now everyone in the crowd and the world can see that she's got demonic marks. And then they start getting into her head. She starts bugging out. She runs backstage. Then her real bandmates come up and they see her demon marks. And now they're tripping on her. They're wondering if she's double timing them the whole time. She begs them not to leave, but they do. Sad times. Then Rumi goes to find Xinyu, and he tells her that he was a liar and he tricked her. And he repeats the story that Guima told him, that he betrayed his whole family, and how he talks all shamey about how they're just demons and they deserve to live in hell. Right now, he's like, yeah, I deserve to stay in hell. I don't even want to be up here. So everything's a mess. Idol Awards gets canceled. Huntrix breaks up, and the demons are running wild. They're whispering in everyone's ear in the world. They're including Bobby, their manager, telling everyone about how they're all failures. And then it's persuading them to go to the big stadium and watch the Saja Boys are going to do an impromptu concert. And everyone's kind of mindlessly walking towards the stadium. And notice that the logo for the Saja Boys is a lion inside of an inverted pentagon. A pentagon, of course, the exterior version of the pentagram, tying us into the inverted pentagram, like in the Church of Satan. We did several shows on the Order of Nine Angles over the years, which utilized geometric shapes like this in their rituals. You know, the Church of Satan was originally called the Order of the Trapezoid because the geometric shapes, they provide a map for these magicians they want to interface with. They use it as a guide map to traverse various concepts, kind of like how a sigil or a symbol speaks to the subconscious, right? So the pentagon or the pentagram, it represents the microcosm or the human will. So anyway, everyone's having these demon voices whispered to them about all their shames and fears. Celine, she's back at the big tree, and Rumi goes to her and tells her to kill her because she deserves to die. Rumi thinks Celine wasn't accepting her because she made her hide the marks instead of just being like, hey, you know what? You're a demon. Like, show the world. So now she's kind of mad at Celine. And Celine's like, look, I just wanted to cover these up until you could build the golden Han moon and save the world. Sorry, right? It's complicated. So the Saja Boys, they get everybody into the stadium. They're doing their little performance, singing about how the people need them to be their idols. And the lyrics are literally about people being on their knees for these new idols. The song is called Your Idol, and the lyrics are about making obsessed listeners listen repeatedly to the idol and giving their soul to them, right? Giving their souls up. I mean, this is a shot fired at the music industry, I believe. Maybe even some more of the destructive types of music, you know, like your drill rap or country music. That's right. I said country music is destructive because it is. Virtually every song is about embracing alcoholism as if that's something to strive for. Anyway, I mean, and I'm just saying, like, I like rap music. So people that are always like, oh, it's just degenerate music. And like, it is. I'm not defending it. But don't tell me country music's any better. I've listened to it. I tried getting into country music. I was like, every song is about alcoholics crying about this, that, and the other. Anyway, So anyway, the Rumi shows up and Guima, he's talking trash, but Rumi, she's got a little song. She's got a little song about how she shouldn't have been suppressing her dark side and her demon scars this whole time. And the song is called What It Sounds Like. And, you know, you'll notice the stage also has the similar three paths with the pentagram for the Saja boys instead of the Saturn chaos magic. But Guima doesn't want them to sing this song, right? Because the lyrics are about not covering up our true inner self, covering up the colors inside her head and so on, right? So Guima, he starts attacking Rumi. Gino shows up to save her. He takes all of Guima's heat and he helps her defeat Guima, which pulls all the demons out of all the people that are, it turns out all the people in the stadium were infected by devils, and they start banishing all the demons. And the song ends with lyrics that say, when the darkness meets the light. So Huntress completes the Hanmon. All is well. The world is saved. Denouement. They are finally in the bathhouse. They wanted some couch time, but they see their fans and they decide they're going to continue performing. They're going to keep grinding. All's well that ends well. Great little ending. Now, let's talk about in conclusion. It's about shamanism, okay? Director Maggie Kang said that it's about the real culture in Korea of shamanism. She did an interview and she said this. She said, shamanism kind of exists in every culture, so it's a really good thing to spring off of. It was a really great idea to do that and have it to be rooted in a real practice. And I looked into this because I didn't know any of this stuff. I looked into it. Korean shamanism is a pagan religion going back 1,000 BC. And they call the shaman the mudang. And most of the mudang are women, like 80%. And the mudang shamans are the intermediary priests, right? Between this world and the next. They still do, I guess, conduct songs and dances for these gods. So that's real, right? And the mudang shaman, they have one type that of shaman that do rituals to become possessed by entities, right? Some of the shaman just make contact. Pretty wild stuff. But the mythology of the creation of Korea is about a deity having a son named Dangun who comes to Earth to create the first Korean kingdom. Anyway, the Mundang are chosen from the deity, and the people that are chosen to do this, they go through this process in order to be confirmed, right? On Wikipedia, they talk about it. It says, the neophyte must ultimately perform an initiation ritual to open up the Malmoon, the gates of speech, that will allow them to receive the words of the spirits. This rite is called the Narim Gut. It involves the neophyte performing the appropriate chants, dances, and oracles to invoke and convey inspiration from the deities. If this initiate fails to perform this correctly, with the deities failing to open their Malmoon, they will have to perform it again. And many Mundang perform multiple Narim Gut before being recognized as properly initiated ritual specialists. Now, I was looking up these deities because I was like, okay, this is very much occulted, you know, like yoga means to yoke, and it's about unionizing with a deity. It's in Lords of the Left-Hand Path. In the book, they talk about different strategies to make contact and be absorbed into these higher powers. Well, one of those deities is called the Chil Song, which is the spirit of the seven stars of the Big Dipper and the Ursa Major constellation. And from this, you're going to have to stick with me for this side tangent. Give me 5 minutes. Well, maybe less. In my book, The Dark Path, there I did a chapter on analyzing the lyrics to Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. And we talked about the lyrics pointing to an occult system. Magic coming from the power of the spoken word, aka the logos that creates the world through the emanation of God's mind, right? You know, in Led Zeppelin, they say, with a word, she can get what she came for. Sometimes words have two meanings. That's what they're talking about, I think. So Stairway to Heaven is it's the name of an actual occult practice. And it's about ascending the chakra points from the base to the crown. It's the traversal of the Kabbalistic tree of life from Malkuth to Kether. And the Egyptian pyramid texts and the Chinese, they call this walking on seven stars. And they're talking about the Big Dipper and the Great Bear and so on, right? And the Great Bear constellation is believed by the Theosophists to complement the seven stars of Pleiades. It's the opposing polarity, right? The Pleiades are the seven sisters. And they believe that they can, that entities can send cosmic energy through Sirius. We talked about Sirius earlier, right? With Leo's gate. Sirius, Sun, Earth, down to the integrated ascended masters, and finally for all of mankind. And the Big Dipper was considered the seven spiritual fathers. Pleiades was the seven spiritual mothers. So you've got these opposing polarities of male and female, just like in the movie, in K-pop, with the Saja boys and the Huntrix. And if you're really into this, I can't recommend enough. Peter Lavenda wrote a book called The Dark Lord, and he goes deeper than you could ever want to go. It's super dense about this process of the stairway to heaven, of activating the seven chakras being switched on through Kenneth Grant's rituals. And they do this in order to awaken the Kundalini, right? And they, the reason they want to awaken the Kundalini is because they believe that you can have opposing polarities inside your mind. You can have the female and male tantric, you know, sexy time. The Shakti is the Kundalini, and the Shakti ascends when you unlock the chakra points to the cranial vault where Shiva resides, and they creates what they call the alchemical wedding. And it's supposed to unlock superpowers and bring about the elixir of life and immortality and all kinds of crazy stuff. Okay. So you can really dig deep into it, but you know, Peter Lavenda goes deep into this idea and ties it into Sumerians and the Babylonians and even in Kabbalah. And he's real deep into the Necronomicon, which allegedly he wrote. And it all ties into the Big Dipper and the Pleiades and so on. And it's the idea that through the power of Sirius and these energies, they can sort of manifest different things, right? These systems of magic are very important to the people that pay attention to this stuff, that understand what's going on. I don't understand because I'm a tourist. I'm trying to figure it out too. But what's funny is that when I was reviewing my notes from the Dark Lord, I also saw an explanation about the powers of sound. I'm going to read to you from the book. Mantras are syllables or words that have specific associations with deities or spiritual qualities. They can be as short as a single syllable, a bija or seed mantra, or as long as a sentence or a verse. Their value lies in the manipulation of sound. Sound is vibration, and different mantras, because of different combinations of vowels and consonants, vibrate at different rates when spoken. And these levels can be adjusted through the use of volume and pitch. They also help to quiet the mind by replacing chaotic inner voices, huh, and random thoughts with a string of seemingly meaningless syllables, thus essentially short-circuiting the language centers of the brain. Now, if you didn't catch it, what I'm saying here is that the demons, the shame that they talk about in this movie, they can quiet it through the spoken word, through the singing of their songs like Golden. Right? Now, here's the big part about the Peter Lavenda notes that I'm going to read you, okay? Mantras, asanas, and mudras, and pranayama are all designed to counteract the normal functions of the mind and the body. Obviously, occultism is not about reinforcing our basic instincts for survival, but in violating them as much as possible. So to sum all that up, the Seven Sisters of the Pleiades is part of the spiritual evolution of mankind. Manipulating sounds or vibrations can be used as part of this process. Keep that in the back pocket as we shift a couple gears into turtles. All right, the turtles. We talked about the symbolism. It's in the film a few times. You know, Zoe's wearing the shirt a couple times in the movie. They talk about wanting to watch a documentary about turtles. And all of that, I believe, is on purpose. This is symbolism of the creation of our world. The mythology of ancient cultures believed that there were these cosmic turtles that the earth is built upon. And if you look at a depiction of it, the shell is the dome and the belly is the flat earth. So the turtle is the chaos matrix upon which order can be formed. it's the original God, because they're always talking about chaos and order as these opposing polarities from which they can create new realities. But that represents, you know, the turtle represents patience, because, you know, turtles live a very long time. They move very slowly, which is kind of how the world evolves. And it's got relations to Saturn, which is also considered the source of chaos from which the world can be built. And it relates to the alchemical process because it's a slow, continuous refinement, all right? Now, I have a history of this turtle thing just constantly dropping in my lap. When I did, I've interviewed Professor Diana Pasalka twice. She gave me the privilege of doing such. Once for each of her books. She's got a third one coming out soon that I can't wait to read and ask her about. And I've even taken one of her, she has online courses you can take. I've taken one of those. It was phenomenal. She is one of my favorite people to talk to. All right. She was on Joe Rogan even, right? So when I was researching Diana Pasalka's stories, like In Encounters, right? That's her second book. There's a section on AI and neural networks. And there's a person named Aya Wheatley who researches neural networks, and she believes in what they call a cosmic perceptual network. It's a mix of human and non-human, and it connects all living things and all worlds into a universal language. And they talk about a pattern of creation relayed in a story about a turtle whose shell gets struck and it expands through different rings. And we also talked about this in American Cosmic, her first book with the Invisible College, and this guy named Tyler D, who visited a friend who had a piece of a UFO in his backpack, and his friend said, I had a dream about the contents of your backpack. I dreamt there was a separate universe that you carried in it, a universe that was created within this universe, that who knows where the universe was created, had very much the essence of turtles all the way down. To say something, and you got to listen to my interviews with her. Listen to that first American Cosmic interview, and you can understand. We have an exchange about this turtle thing. To say something is turtles all the way down is another way of saying it's a continuous process of evolution with no final stage of completion. And this was a term popularized by Bertrand Russell when someone told him that the world is flat and it rests on the back of a turtle. He replies by asking what the turtle is standing on, and the woman says it's turtles all the way down, right? It's this sort of recursive, infinite process. Then another piece I'll throw at you, Stephen King's It, which is one of my favorite stories ever. It's the story of Pennywise, but it's actually a story about Matterin, this adversarial turtle that vomits up the whole universe into creation during what they call the Ritual of Chud. And Matterin is the turtle that exists in the macroverse, you know, the larger universe, and created the whole world. It was the adversary of Matterin. It was the brother. And in the book, during the Ritual of Chud, which is the final battle with the spider It in the 1950s, we hear that It has an eternal energy manifested from Matterin. Bill is in the Ritual of Chud when he sees a final other that was the creator of the turtle. So it's kind of turtles all the way down there too. So you got both the final outer and the Matterin, and they're watching as it devours things. And I'm going to read you a passage from the book. Suddenly he thought he understood. It meant to thrust him through some wall at the end of the universe and into some other place. What that old turtle called the macroverse, where it really lived, where it existed as a titanic glowing core, which might be no more than the smallest mote in the other's mind. He would see it naked, a thing of unshaped, destroying light. And there he would either be mercifully annihilated or live forever, insane and yet conscious inside his homicidal, endless, formless, hungry being. And there's so much to unpack there. We're not going to go into that. It sounds a lot like Approaching the Abyss and Aleister Crowley's Corone Zone. When we talk about the other, you're talking about the adversarial forces. This ties me into my Dark Enlightenment series where we talked about the CCRU, talking about these demonic forces. They called the other, they called it a different term, but it was something about the other. But it's all very interesting that this would all connect too. Now, there's this, so, but what I'm saying is that the turtles is more than just the reason it's brought up in the movie. K-pop is on purpose. Now, we're going to tie this together in a very strange and obscure reference. In 2021, I did a film analysis of the movie Bliss on Amazon. And the characters in the movie, if you haven't seen, I don't think this is a plot spoiler, but the characters, they stay in a hotel called the Hotel Pleiades. And in that movie, they also use the line, "It's turtles all the way down," which I thought was kind of interesting. And in it, we talked about Theosophy and Helena Blavatsky and how in her book, The Secret Doctrine Dialogues, she says that these Pleiades are the most occult constellations that exist. They are very occult because they are connected with all the rishis too. They have an interchange of thought with the rishis. And I don't understand what that means. I dig around online. I'm trying to understand more about this. And I found an article on BlavatskyTheosophy.com about the Pleiades to try to understand a little bit more. And this is what it says. It might firstly be useful to explain that there is a constellation called Ursa Major, also known as the Great Bear, the Big Dipper, and the Plow. In India, it is referred to as the Saptarishi, which means seven rishis. The Sanskrit term rishi means a sage or saint. It consists of seven bright stars. The Saptarishi have a connection both in Hindu mythology and esotericism with the Pleiades. The Pleiades, also known as the Seven Sisters, is a star cluster located in the constellation of Taurus, and although having several thousand stars, there are said to be six of particular brightness and a seventh which is hidden or not visible to physical sight. In The Secret Doctrine, Blavatsky and her adept teachers explain, as to the mysterious constellation of the seven rishis is in the Great Bear, if Egypt made them sacred to the oldest gentrix Typhon, India has connected all these symbols ages ago with time or yuga revolutions, and the Saptarishis are intimately connected with our present age, the dark Kali Yuga. She goes on to say that in the Bhagavad Purana scripture, that they call this the Great Circle of Time, and it's represented as a tortoise. And across the tortoise's loins are these seven rishis. And what I think it's saying is that the Great Bear is talking about cycles of time and the final age of mankind, which is the Kali Yuga that everyone thinks we're currently living in. And this takes me back to the Steve Bannon thing, because that's what informs his worldview. And a lot of the, traditionalism folks that subscribe to that. You'd have to get into the title bomb thing. Should I put a link in the show notes, Isaac? All right, I'll put a link in the show notes for the Ben Teitelbaum interview and the first or second Pasalka interview. Okay. So what are we talking about with all this nonsense? Let's wrap it up. Okay. We're talking about Go with the Bobs. We're talking about women in this movie are trying to create a new world. And without the demonic influence that it currently has in the Kali Yuga Dark Age. And they do this by taking advantage of opposing polarities. It's referenced many times in the movie, right? Rumi is the opposing polarity herself. She's part demon. She sings like when darkness finally meets the light. The main theme of this film is her approaching and accepting her shadow side, the demon side. We heard her bandmates acknowledge how she has all these walls up, and the doctor said you have to become whole, which is, by the way, very much Carl Jung's talk about why you need to do shadow work. And we saw several checkered patterns with the floors and the bandana that covered up the markings. They also struggle with two potential songs to sing at the final scene. One is positive, that's golden. One is negative, that's takedown. And they choose the path of positive. But it's only when Rumi confronts her shadow that she can create a positive world and build and complete the Hanmoon. So it's possible that what we're witnessing is the creation of a new world in K-pop Demon Hunters, right? That's what all the turtle symbolism is about. The fact that the shaman created the golden Hanmoon, which I interpret as the golden age, because that comes after the Kali Yuga. That's what Steve Bannon and the traditionalists, Alexander Dugan and all these folks, are talking about. They think that this is the final stage of the alchemical process, And this links into all that talk about Blavatsky, about the Pleiades being part of this Kali Yuga process, which she believed she was living through, as does everybody else, it seems. Because Kali Yuga is the time of the Dark Age. It's corruption. It's chaos. And Bannon is utilizing all that archetypal symbolism. And that's what we're witnessing with Trump as the chaos candidate, showing the darkest age of corruption and spiritual ignorance. Right? Yeah. And don't pick on me. Trump himself said it. He's like, I don't think I'm going to heaven. Right? He plays a role in the archetypal, ritual that we're all going through to bring about the golden age. That's what he said he was doing. It just doesn't look the way you think it looks, right? And the idea is that there will be a setup for a golden age from this. The tech elites will claim that this golden age is going to come through their AI singularity digital matrix, which I don't believe. But in K-pop, Demon Hunters, they show us the end of the dark age of the Kali Yuga when they banish the demons from our world and allow us to connect with one another with good vibes. They choose positivity. They choose acceptance, accepting even demons, right? Because that's what Rumi is. She's part demon. They are the turtles creating the new world, utilizing the vibrations of sounds. And these are, again, based off real life shaman who also looked to these energy sources of the Pleiades and the Big Dipper for these opposing polarity energies of the active and receiver, male and female, which is what you see in the movie, the males versus the female. The receiving female forces of Huntrix using the active male force of the Saja boys in order to bring about the golden Han moon. You know, it's like electricity. You've got a positive charge with a negative potential, and you need both to create the circuit, to create the magic, to create the reality. And these two opposing forces can come together to create. And in this story, this is cue the Full House piano moment. It's about creating a better world. It's about getting rid of this demonic force of shame and being shamed about who you are and accepting yourself for who you are. This is one of those examples of an occult practice that isn't about embracing evil, because it's not always exactly like that. It's a little more complicated. Sometimes it really is just about taking the positive path, which is what I talked about in my book, The Dark Path, with my own individuation type process. So that's what the movie's about, according to me. But thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to my new YouTube. While I'm yammering here at the end, go to YouTube, search occult symbolism, all one word, and subscribe, because I'm getting to 100K. I'm getting there, and I want you to be part of that journey, all right? If you can't figure out the spelling or you can't find it, go to allmylinks.com/IsaacW, 2 A's for double awesome. Links are always in the show notes. Thank you for listening to this show. Thank you for listening to my crazy theories. And be sure to catch up on the YouTube, all right? Thanks for listening. Stay positive.